That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Okay, I know we always say we got a wild ride for you, but this time we really do. That is the truth. And you can fucking count on it. And something else that you can count on is this next group of new patrons. We can count on them. We love them. We are so excited to say their names proudly here. The first is our newest champion for actors' rights. Hell yes. We absolutely love to see it. That is Asher Wallace.
Woohoo!
Asher, thank you so much for being a champion. It's such important work. Also, huge shout out to our newest vessel head all aboard to Autumn Long.
Autumn Long.
Autumn Long all aboard. Listen, we love you both unconditionally forever, starting right now.
And people we also love unconditionally forever, starting right now, who are joining the innermost sacred circle of our Patreon, Toni fucking Collette's.
Sacred.
We just fucking love you. Toni fucking Collette loves you. We don't know what we would do without you.
We'd be lost.
We would be lost.
Lost.
We'd be lost. Jack Yateman, Colin Lachlan, Emily Pinsonot, Rebecca Holiday, Sarah T, Christina McGrew, Lynn Walker, Alexandria Cardo, Goose, and Daniel Bayo. Fuck yeah, we love you.
We love you.
Welcome to the coolest crew on the internet. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, and there's some tough competition. But this is the coolest crew on the internet.
And we have one more cool cat joining our coolest crew. Actually, they've been here, but they have upgraded. And it is Stephanie Famelos. And she's cool as hell.
She's cool as hell.
Stephanie's fucking cool as hell.
We love you all so goddamn much, unconditionally, forever. You mean the world to us. And just hold on to your butts, because this episode is about to
make that butt fly right off.
If you don't hold on tight enough,
you better hold on to that
your
butt.
Butt's going to fly off, I guarantee it. And here we go.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy. And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I like watching scary movies, and so I watch them, and I tell you about them so that you can live vicariously through me, or alternatively, get the information you need to watch the movies for yourself, if you're feeling brave.
If you're feeling brave.
But before we get into this week's movie, one little piece of news, which is that we will be taking next week off.
Why
because
is that,
our very own Henley will be tying the knot, as they say.
As they say, getting that old ball and chain. She's really locked down now. If the baby didn't do it, the husband will.
I know, you guys. My life's about to change forever. I'm going to be a married woman. Everything will be different then, you know. Everything will change. I personally just can't believe that I'm getting married because I'm so goddamn tired. I can't believe how tired I am. Having a 2-month-old baby, I gotta say, it's really like having a newborn baby. The thing is like, yes, you're tired, but the problem is that like, it just keeps going. Like, it's like, it's not like he's gonna start sleeping through the night anytime soon. And it's like, I'm gonna be waking up. See, I'm excited because now I'm waking up at like 2, 3, or 4 a.m. instead of waking up at like 1 a.m. Like, that's an improvement.
Progress.
For me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like, still the bar is super low for sleep right now. And I just can't. I'm so excited to hang out with you guys. I
can't fucking wait.
My head is going to explode. I'm so excited. Oh, I don't even know what to do with myself. I can't even believe it.
Listeners, for context, we have not been physically, the three of us together, since August 2020.
Mm-hmm. It's been over a year.
So our heads are going to freaking explode.
I had to have a goddamn wedding in order to get us together again.
Had to have a wedding.
A wedding.
That's the point of the wedding, is so we can hang out.
Yeah. Literally.
Continue to get married on an every 2 year rotation, no matter what, so that we can be together.
No, but I'm not joking, where you always have something that like you need to look forward to, right? And so once this wedding is over, we need to start planning our next trip like ASAP. Absolutely. So that we all have something to look forward to.
It, because the wedding got postponed because of COVID, it has been like such a long time coming, and it feels like there's been so much build up to it that we're all going to like crash afterwards, and it's going to be like, well, now fucking what? Now what?
now what?
The thing we've been looking forward to for 2 years happened.
I know. I can't believe it's been 2 years.
Huge. It's going to be the freaking best thing ever. I'm going to lose my mind. I'm so excited to just be with, oh God,
people I don't even I love know the most. I really don't know what to do
me,
with myself.
Me, sweet baby son. Wow, 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 wow.
Wow, 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 wow.
Wow, 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 wow. So listeners, sorry, we're going to be just overwhelmed.
Having the time of our lives.
And we can't, we'll tell you about it in 2 weeks, okay? Okay.
Okay. I wish all of you could be there. All of you listeners, you're going to be there in my heart. Mm-hmm. I love you so much.
We'll carry you with us in our hearts.
We will carry you with us.
Should I have them play the TSDW theme song on the dance floor? I'm going to add it to the DJ list.
Dung, 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 dung.
It's going to be a bop. The crowd's going to go crazy.
And just have our intros.
Yes.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary Didn't Watch.
Our very first podcast wedding. Wow.
So that's what I've been up to. I've just been up to not sleeping and thinking about this wedding. And that's pretty. And still watching Love Island, of course.
Great.
That's pretty much it. You know? Mm-hmm. What about you guys?
Just getting ready for this freaking wedding, man. That's all I can think about. I'm leaving town in just 1.5 days, right? I have one more day before I leave town. I don't know how time works, but because you're getting married in your hometown, which is very near where my sister lives and my nephew. So I'm going to get to spend time with them, which I'm very, very excited about. So I'm just in full, like, thinking about trip mode. I get really, before I go out of town, I the day before I leave town is very important to me. I like to be prepared before that final day in terms of like logistics. So the final day.
I fucking love being prepared.
Oh my God, I love to be prepared.
I love being early. I love not to be stressed.
Oh, that final day for me is like, that is your day to mentally prep. So like, that's the day I do things. For me, I will like exercise. I'm going to do my nails for the wedding tomorrow. I'm really going to take my time. I'm going to like put a hair treatment on, like, so I could be ready to go. So that then it's like, then I can get ready to go. So I'm really honestly looking forward to like my day before leaving day.
That'll be nice.
A very honored tradition for me personally. So I'm fucking so excited. Holy shit. Wow. I can't believe it's here. The event of my life. My whole
life. It's
going
to be incredible. It's going to be incredible.
Oh, you guys. I hope you're right. No,
all it has to be is us being there with you, and it will be incredible. That's literally all I care about.
Oh,
you
my God.
You could straight up cancel the wedding when I arrive, and I won't even be upset. I'll be like, whatever.
Let's just hang out.
As long as we get to hang.
As long as you get to hang, that's all that matters.
I mean, are you okay? Great. We're just going to hang out.
We're just going to hang out.
It's all I want.
No pressure. We're just going
to
hang out.
And also to celebrate your love and your family, and it's beautiful and wonderful.
It's wonderful.
Wow.
Well, two pretty important things happened to me this week, and one is that the Matrix 4 trailer came out.
Oh my god.
I still haven't seen it. Wait, Sammy, I haven't seen it. I know. Henley. I meant to fucking watch it before I saw you because I knew it would be the only thing you'd be able to think about.
Oh my god.
It's true. It did make me cry only because at the very end it plays the like note of music that's very much from the original Matrix, like original Matrix score. And just
I'm gonna watch
really
the trailer again after this.
Brought me back. I'm just very excited. I will say it's not going to be like the original Matrix. And so we got to get that expectation out of our head.
Yeah.
Because we got to remember that in the middle of the Matrix and now, Lana Wachowski also made Jupiter Ascending, Cloud Atlas, a lot of stinkers. So
Speed Racer.
So I think that we just got to go in with the right expectations and I think it'll be really fun.
Yeah, I will say, yes, yes. Evidence maybe points to stinkers, but this trailer, it hit all the notes for me in a way I wasn't expecting. I also haven't seen 2 and 3, so Sammy and I have a mission to do that and
we
power through
watch.
And fucking make it happen. Because I was like, huh, I wonder how we got here based on me only having seen one. But I just like, it just gave me the right feeling, I guess I should say.
It the pieces
feels
are there.
Like we could be getting somewhere that I will enjoy.
I've gotten the sense from some headlines I've seen that people are excited. People are excited about this trailer. People
cautiously
feel like it's
optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic. They're thinking it's going to be better than the real duds that came before. Besides one, obviously. The only issue I've also seen some headlines that maybe Lily is not a fan. Or has been
yes,
like very
you know,
much
I
like
didn't realize. Yeah, I didn't realize that they weren't both directing, that it is just Lana. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure why, but yeah, I guess judging from what you just said sounds like something it's not a good reason. Something went down.
Yeah, from what from the very limited research I've done on this, again, haven't even seen the trailer. Mm-hmm. But Lily, I believe, at first was working on another project or something. And so, but then in the future, has been when she's been asked about it, has been like, wanted to leave that behind. Like, I didn't want to be a part of that. I felt like I need to revisit like the Matrix again in my life.
Maybe it's less so this particular Matrix and more like I didn't want to do more Matrix.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. What I got from my very limited research, which is like fair.
It's less troubling than if she were like, this is shit.
She might also have been vaguely, thinly veiled, meaning this is shit. We don't know. Who knows what's going through her head?
Either way, they're getting my money.
Oh, they're going to get. Oh, they're going to get my money.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to cry. I can't. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't wait. Oh, my God. Also, just Keanu looks so good.
I love him.
Carrie-Anne Moss looks so good.
And I had forgotten that Yahya Abdul-Mateen II
is so good in it. Wow,
I'm thrilled.
A feast for the eyes, so.
It's going to be great. And then the other equally important thing that happened to me this week is that I cut myself on a piece of bread, not a knife, while I was cutting bread. It was a pretty stale piece of sourdough or sourdough loaf.
What? How badly?
Like
it
drew blood, and I... And I just was so shocked that happened. I think my hand like slipped and it cut between my fingers.
Ow.
And like sliced it and started bleeding. But it was from like a piece of bread. And I just started laughing. I was like, what the fuck just happened? Like bread just drew blood from my hand.
And was this bread that you were going to eat?
It sadly was, yes. And I did. I did eat it, yes.
Did it hurt your mouth?
I only ate the middle part. I didn't eat the crust. The middle was still pretty. The middle was still pretty soft.
Yeah,
yeah. I can see sourdough crust can get pretty sharp.
Pretty sharp.
Yeah. A good thing to have in your back pocket for if you're getting attacked. If you have some stale bread.
Mm. A new weapon of choice.
Mm. Oh, my yeah, God, I pick Sammy. Sourdough.
Sammy, I did not see that coming.
I didn't either.
Is it like when you get a paper cut and the chemicals get in there and it's all painful? Did you have like sourdough yeasty feelings?
Ooh, I don't think it got any yeasty feelings, but it did. It does feel like a paper cut. I can still feel it. It hurts. And it reminded me, I've also cut myself on an ice cube previously. So I've just okay, now have that? A fun. I have a fun list of
fun list. A list of two
things that have drawn blood that ice, I wouldn't though, have expected.
You could like stab people with ice. I feel like in really cold movies sometimes there's ice. Perfect.
We get it's the break perfect, off a little icicle.
It's yeah, a perfect yeah, murder weapon because well, it yeah, melts.
Because it melts. If isn't it? You got to be careful if you stand under icicles.
They right? look scary, yeah. If you've seen icicles, they don't look gentle.
No, they don't look good. You know what I've cut myself on more than once, and every time I do it, I'm like, fuck, I did it again, is on the Faya Greek yogurt.
Ooh.
Those things. Are sharp. Those are sharp.
When I, that, yeah, like, tinfoily no,
not
material?
The not the tinfoil, the plastic. Plastic.
The yeah, the plastic. Edge of the plastic. Sharp as hell.
Yeah. I've cut myself more than once on it. It hurts like a motherfucker. And I'm like, this again? Henley, you've done this before. You think you'd learn to be a little... Obviously, I'm very eager to get at my Greek yogurt. I just love it so much.
Are you tearing into that yogurt? Faya is a great brand of Greek yogurt.
It's a great reminder to just always be vigilant.
Always.
Don't let your guard down.
You never know what's going to get you.
But let's move on from those really important topics.
Yeah, I think let's move on.
To this week's movie, which I can't fucking wait to tell you guys about. It is a new movie. It is Malignant. Came out just this past weekend. Directed by James Wan. Written by Akilah Cooper. Story by Akilah Cooper, James Wan, and Ingrid Bisou. Starring Annabelle Wallace, Maddie Hassan, George Young, McColl, Brianna White, and it is currently in theaters, and you can stream it on HBO Max.
Ooh. Oh.
Do you think it's possible for Sammy or Emily for me or Emily to watch this? Sammy?
Did you just confuse who you were?
Is it possible for Sammy or Emily to watch this movie? Is it?
For me, Sammy or Emily to watch this
Did
movie?
Did you know that I'm Sammy?
Wait, what the fuck? What? Well,
yeah, wait. Did you know that I'm you?
Who am I?
You're
what does
no
this
one.
Mean?
you're no one. You're not, you're not real.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
That's so stupid.
To answer your question, Henley, I don't think you could watch it specifically. If you could glean what that might mean.
Oh, no. Sorry,
no. There's children in this?
A mother and son situation? Could there be a mother and son situation?
No, I mean, you'll see. You'll decide after. I will say, anyone who is on the fence about whether or not to watch it, I think watch it. Because part of what is so great about it is the element of surprise. So if you're feeling up to it, turn this off, watch it, and then come back and listen to this because I was so surprised.
Okay, that's exciting. Oh, I love a surprise.
And it was very fun. There's a great twist.
Ooh, I love to hear about a twist.
Yeah.
I love to hear about a twist. You don't know how I experience movies right now is I love to hear about them. Movies? Yes, love to hear about them.
It has a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 51% on Metacritic.
Ooh, big disparity.
And a 6.3 on IMDb.
Closing the gap.
Yep. Its budget was $40 million, and today's Sunday. It's only been out for a few days, but it's not doing well. It's projected to make $5 million its opening weekend, which is not great.
No, that's great.
Also,
not
probably
great.
Not helped by the fact that they released it immediately on HBO Max.
That's what I was going to say. Is I'm sure a lot of people watched on. I mean, that's how I watched it. I watched it on HBO. So
yeah,
I don't get the reasoning behind that. I will just say, like, there's no rhyme or reason to it. What they're releasing just in the theaters, what they're putting on streamers and on theaters, like, I don't get it.
I don't
get
it.
What are they?
Well, HBO is doing most of the Warner Brothers movies. So it's because this is a Warner Brothers. I know they have like a specific contract with Warner Brothers new releases. And that's,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I get that like people are still uneasy about going to the movie theater. But yeah, then still do it like both ways and not have it just. I don't get it.
They must have just paid a fucking shitload of money to get the rights to this.
True. They are still making money somehow. But $35 million feels like not as much as they're getting paid, probably.
That's true. There's not much trivia. It was originally supposed to be released on August 14th, 2020. Mm. Obviously, that did not happen. But in lieu of trivia, I wrote down some quotes from reviews because reading reviews of this has been very fun.
Fun.
And this one I love. So it says, this is the goofy James Wan of Aquaman and Furious 7, not the intense one of Insidious and The Conjuring.
Interesting.
I feel like we haven't talked about that James Wan also directed Aquaman and Furious 7.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
And it is important to note because I mostly agree with this, though I will say I think it's, yeah, somewhere in the middle. Like, he's definitely bringing his horror skills to this as well, but it's like with his learned knowledge from Furious 7 and Aquaman with a hint of that. So this is like bigger and sillier. I haven't seen it either.
I haven't either.
But you can presume what it is like. It's over the top.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This next quote says, Wan's final twist is so maniacal and so, and this is a compliment, deeply and thoroughly stupid that it more than makes up for the minor missteps along the way. That's from Allison Shoemaker.
Deeply stupid as a compliment makes me so excited.
It's so funny. And the next one is, there's no way to watch this deranged follow-up and not conclude that Wan's back where he belongs.
Wait, what is follow-up?
I don't know. I think like following up to his previous horror movies because
I believe he has
currently directing the Aquaman sequel. So he's just been focusing on like blockbusters. So he hasn't done a horror film in a while. And it sounds like he just wanted to squeeze one in between the Aquamans because he's obviously loves horror. And this is what we got. This is the product.
Oh, I am stoked.
I'm very excited.
Does this feel like a, it's 40 million, but does it feel like big budget or does it feel like small?
Yes, I would say that I think something we've previously talked about is when movies have that Harry Potter feel, horror movies have a Harry Potter feel. Mm-hmm. This I think does, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Who's
That's
in
good.
It?
That's good to know.
Annabelle Wallace is the main character. She, I just know her from Peaky Blinders. Grice.
What did Grice. You just say?
Grice is her name.
Grice?
Grice.
Grice.
That's how Cillian Murphy's accent is.
Oh, Grice?
Grice.
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 Grice. Grice.
I fucking nailed it. Just take my word for it.
I really believe you.
Grice.
Grice.
I thought you were saying rice. Okay.
It's got
okay.
a thick, brummy accent.
Cross. Okay. Fuck yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited and wonder what this could hold.
Let's watch this freaking trailer. Wet our whistles on this trailer.
Let's wet our whistles.
Let's wet our whistles.
I'm having visions.
The body of Dr. Florence Weaver was found brutally murdered in her home this morning.
Did you know her?
No, but I saw her die.
I'm seeing things. I'm seeing murders. As they're happening.
Hello?
He says
his name is Gabriel.
I think he's someone from my past.
whatever happened to you before you joined our family hurt you in a way that I can't even imagine.
Stop saying that.
Maddie, who are you talking to?
Gabriel.
Is he your imaginary friend?
He's the devil.
Whatever it was,
it's back. He killed again.
He's getting closer.
He wants to talk to you. Mom, what do you know? He's coming for me.
To make of this.
Honestly, I'm intrigued. And also mainly because I like her. She's like an interesting actress and she hasn't been in anything else besides Peaky Blinders.
Yeah.
Grace. Is it scary, Sammy?
There are scary parts. I think it's pretty I would put it low on the scary scale.
It didn't look that, maybe it's just the thing we've talked about, where it's like any like, yeah, that like Harry Pottery huge budget is like just not as scary to me, because I think there's like something about the like grittiness of a lower budget, or at least a lower feeling budget movie, that's really scary to me. But yeah, just seeing like, I'm just so aware that it's special effects, I guess, it went in a movie like this, so maybe I'll, you know, be proven wrong. And it's definitely like jump scares still look freaky, but I screamed just now in the trailer, but I wasn't like scared. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. Cause now when movies lean into CGI, you're like, oh, well that's just CGI. That wouldn't happen in real life. That's not like a practical effect. When it's a practical effect, it's like a little bit more like, ooh, maybe that's possible.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Ooh, but
either
I'm
way,
excited.
I'm excited.
I get me to this deeply stupid twist. I cannot wait.
Yeah,
oh my God.
I can't wait.
We're going to have some fun. Let's do it.
Okay, you guys, I just learned a really wild fact that I need to share with you. I know I'm not usually a fact person, but did you know that Americans pay about 2 times as much for their wine as the rest of the world? Why? Because laws dating back to Prohibition ensure the right of wholesalers to make big margins. Okay, look. We got to be getting these wine deals that we deserve. And guess what? I have a solution for you, because this podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. Naked Wines is a subscription service that seamlessly connects you to the finest independent winemakers on the planet. So you get a box of the market's best quality wines, however often you'd like, for a fraction of the price you'd normally pay in stores. Use our code TOOSCARY for the code and password at nakedwines.com to get their incredible deal of 6 bottles for just $39.99. I recently really loved a bottle that I got from Naked Wines of Chardonnay, and I'm not usually a big Chardonnay person, but I'm getting into it. You know, crisp, buttery Chardonnay is actually quite nice. And also the least acidic white wine, just FYI, if you're a little heartburn sufferer like me who refuses to give wine up, that might be a way to go. And I love just being able to try things that I wouldn't normally pick out for myself, because I get these incredible variety boxes of wonderful bottles at, again, a fraction of the price. And how does Naked Wines do it? Well, Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, allowing for vineyard to your door delivery at up to 60% off what you would pay in store. By cutting out the traditional retail middleman costs, winemakers can pass those savings on hundreds of top quality award-winning wines to you without skimping on quality. It's such a good deal to get Naked Wines. I mean, Price, yes. Variety, knowing that you're getting wines directly from independent winemakers is just so, so wonderful. They've got a great quiz where you can give them the descriptors that you like in your wine so that each shipment is tailored to your tastes. So there really is no reason not to give it a try. Head to nakedwines.com/too scary and click enter voucher in the top right and put in too scary for both the code and password to get 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off and less than $7 per bottle. That's nakedwines.com/too scary and use the code and password too scary and grab 6 bottles for just $39.99. One last time, that's nakedwines.com/too scary, code and password too scary for $100 off your first 6 bottles.
Okay, so we start in 1993 in a hospital. There is a doctor named Dr. Florence Weaver speaking direct to camera, like she is making like a case file on a patient named Gabriel, saying that Gabriel is getting stronger, he's getting more malicious. And as she is giving us this report, we hear some clattering in the hallway and some screaming, and someone runs in and says, Gabriel, he got out. And she gets up and runs, and there is just mayhem happening in the hallway. Someone is thrown out of the room, one of the nurses, and there's a person lying dead, like something very bad has clearly happened. A security guard is running up. Dr. Weaver instructs him, like, he has like a tranquilizer dart. Dr. Weaver says, yeah, go in and get Gabriel, shoot him with the dart. The security guard, like, slowly opens the door and starts pointing the gun in, and then just starts screaming and pulls his arms back, and they are like broken in the forearm, and we get some bones protruding.
Oh, Jesus.
Nasty. That will happen quite a few times in this movie. And Gabriel is just easily has the upper hand here, is like killing people left and right. Eventually, Dr. Weaver herself goes in because nobody else is left, and she is able to crawl in and grab the tranquilizer dart and shoots Gabriel.
Wait, a quick question. Do we get the sense that, like, they were running experiments on this Gabriel person? Or, like, were they trying to rehabilitate this Gabriel child
We're not really sure.
And do we see Gabriel or no?
No, not yet.
Okay.
So, there's someone, two guards left alive in there that run in to help her after she shoots Gabriel. And she says, strap him to the chair. And they pick him up, and our first glimpse is little kid's sock, like a little kid's feet in little panda socks dragging across the floor. So we see that this is a young boy. And we get a quick glimpse of him, and it is not human looking, but it's like too fast to really see. We're just like, what the fuck did we just see? And all the lights in the room start flickering, and from a radio in the corner of the room, Gabriel like says something through it. Like they all turn to the radio, and she said, so one of the doctors says he's able to communicate his thoughts through the electricity. And so that some talking is happening through the radio. And Dr. Weaver turns to the direction of Gabriel, says, you have been a bad, bad boy. And she says, I thought we could help him, but I was wrong. It's time to cut out the cancer. And she says that straight into camera. And then this like metal music starts playing, and we get our opening credits. Feels what? Very James Wanian.
Oh my God.
Wow. And the images that we're seeing underneath our opening titles are all like kind of medical horror looking things, some sort of surgery happening. We're getting like, you know, a scalpel cutting into a body and like gross looking stuff happening.
Great.
Cool. Then we go to present day Seattle, and Henley's is where you're not going to love it.
Oh, no. And no.
We meet our protagonist, Madison, who is Annabelle Wallace, and she is very pregnant.
Okay, great. Here we go. I'm just going to disassociate now. Mm-hmm, so
that's a good idea. I'd say that the first, like, this scene
later,
is probably...
See you later,
Hen. I'll circle back later. All right, keep going.
Yeah, and you tap out and tap back in and, you know... 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
And she's wearing scrubs. She comes home to a husband and he's watching TV. She turns the TV off and he's an asshole to her right away. And it's like, I was watching that, like being a dick for someone who is tired and pregnant. She's like, I need to rest. I'm really tired. And he says, no, maybe you need to stop getting pregnant all the time.
Oh, God. Here we go.
And it's clear that there is an abusive relationship happening here, at least verbally abusive. And then it quickly turns physical. He says through this conversation, we learn that she has had multiple miscarriages prior to this. And he says, how many times do my children need to die inside of you before you stop getting pregnant? It's horrible.
Jesus Christ.
Awful. And she stands up to him briefly, and he reacts physically, violently, and slams her against a wall. She hits her head really hard, and he immediately goes to apologizing, like, oh, my God, baby, I'm so sorry. Let me go get you some ice. Runs downstairs. She locks him out of the room. She's touching the back of her head. It is bleeding a lot, but she won't let him back in the room. And she gets in bed and falls asleep, which is not a great idea if you have a head injury, but she doesn't let him in. We see that night he is sleeping on the couch and she is sleeping up in the room, and he hears some noises in the kitchen. And it sounds like kind of cutlery clattering or something, like, and he says, Maddie, is that you? Are you in there? Gets up, and then a loud noise happens, and he goes in, and it's the blender turned on with nothing in it.
We'll never look at a blender the same way again.
After your next.
Yeah, after your next.
We know what blenders are capable of.
Uh-huh.
And he looks confused, kind of slowly approaches it, turns it off, and the second he turns it off, the refrigerator door opens behind him. He turns, like, what the fuck is going on? Closes that refrigerator door. The second that closes, the TV comes on. Mm. He loops back around to the living room, and we see a silhouette of someone, like, sitting on the couch watching TV. He quickly turns to turn the light on, and when he turns it on, the person is gone. And he's looking around the room, scared, and we see a shadowy figure approach behind him and very, very hard slam his head into the wall.
Oh, wow.
And very quickly getting his comeuppance.
Yeah, great. Mm-hmm.
And as that happens, we see Maddie wake up in bed with a fright, and her pillow is like, has a pool of blood on it. But she has, like, clearly heard something. She also looks creeped out, gets up, gets out of bed, starts walking downstairs, is calling out his name, like, ooh, is everything okay? Goes down, gets to the living room and sees his dead body. His neck is broken so severely that bones are, like, protruding out of his neck.
Ew.
And it's, like, dark and shadowed. And so you're, like, staring right at that spot, like, trying to see what you can see. And then the shadowy figure just, like, comes up from right behind him, like, right from that spot. And she sees it and fucking panics, runs back upstairs. And we see that the figure is chasing her. And she gets into the room and holds the door closed. But it's, like, as if an invisible force now is, like, banging it, and eventually blows the door off the hinges, throwing her back completely. And, like, she hits her head again and is knocked unconscious again.
Yikes.
Then we cut to later that night, presumably two detectives at the house. This is Detective Kakoa Shaw. They call him Detective K, and Detective Moss, Regina Moss. So Detective K and Moss, Detectives K and Moss are kind of surveying the crime scene and just being like, what the fuck could have done this? This is crazy. This doesn't look like a normal crime. Like, the way his neck is broken is really not like normal. Anything they've ever seen before.
Yeah.
Then we see Maddie waking up in the hospital with her sister Sydney at her side, and Sydney is crying and like happy that she's awake and is like, oh my God, are you okay? And Maddie starts crying and is like, oh my God, I was so scared. I was so scared for my baby, and reaches her hands down, and she has lost the baby. And Sydney turns to her crying and says, they couldn't save her. I'm so sorry. And Maddie is absolutely devastated and just like starts wailing. It's very, very sad. She basically is like catatonic for a couple days, but eventually comes to, and with her sister at her side the whole time. It's clear that her and her sister are really close. And, well, actually, her sister says at one point to one of the detectives, because the detectives are, you know, coming in and out checking on her, and her sister does say at one point that the husband had kept them apart. And so it's clear that they were close, but that obviously this husband was awful and kind of probably tried to isolate Maddie. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so eventually she gets well enough to be discharged and sent home, and Sydney drives her home and is saying, you know, you don't have to stay here. You could stay with me. But Maddie is pretty insistent, like, no, it's like fine. I'm going to be fine. Which is like crazy. Like, no, you were attacked by a man in this house. Like, don't stay there.
Yeah. And also there's some, you were attacked by a man multiple times, and also a shadowy ghost figure that might be the devil.
And so, but she stays there, and Sydney comes in at one point, and again, Maddie is crying and grieving, and she says, I just so badly wanted a biological connection to something. And Sydney says, what do you mean by that? And Maddie reveals that she had never told Sydney, but that their mom told her that she was adopted when she was 8, and her mom died in childbirth. And so she says, I'm adopted. And so this, the child would have been her first like true blood connection. But as she says, like, I'm adopted, it's this like big dramatic reveal, and it cuts to like, they start playing this spooky cover of Where Is My Mind, and like panning shots of the city. And there's these like transitional moments that are very James Wan, that it like has like, it like reminded me of Saw, because he does these kind of quick transitional moments where it's like either some metal song playing and just like quick cuts. There was a hint of that thrown in that that I appreciated.
Wait, did she say she was adopted when she was 8? Is that what she said?
Yes.
Wouldn't the sister like remember that happening?
The sister's younger. Yeah, the sister wasn't born yet.
Oh, the sister's that much younger. Okay, yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So then we go to a new place. It's called the Seattle Underground, and a woman is giving a tour of old Seattle, and it's basically, she says, all this used to be street level, but after the Great Fire of 1889, they decided to build the city on top of it to prevent flooding. And this real fucking thing that I absolutely hate. There is a literal city underneath Seattle. There is a whole nother city underneath Seattle, and I really, really hate that.
What the fuck?
Wait, guys, I've done this. Yeah, I've done this tour before, except we had to stop. I had to stop it halfway through because my mom gets really bad claustrophobia and she got super claustrophobic during the tour and had to leave. And so I like honestly barely even remember it.
How does that work?
I can't even really tell you. I don't really get it.
And I don't know why not every single horror movie is set here. It's the scariest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Scary.
But so this woman is giving a tour, and at the end of the tour, she's getting ready to go home and like basically closing the place down by herself, which can you fucking imagine being in an underground city by yourself, turning all the lights off, going like room to room, like let me just shut down the underground city for the night. And of course she hears a noise in the distance. It's very dark through like a different little tunnel, and she's kind of walking towards it saying hello, like nobody can be down here, you need to leave. And the lights start flickering, but she's just turned the lights off. And again she hears another noise coming from that same direction. She's walking towards it more, kind of who's over there. And then, you know, a chill goes down her spine and she's like, okay, fuck this. Starts running. It's clear that somebody else is in there. And she runs, but the person catches up with her. We see that it is the same figure that attacked Maddie and her husband. And it gets this woman. And we cut to an attic somewhere where this man is tying up this woman, and he's got a real pig face, wig face vibe about him. I would say he's got long dark hair and like a long black leather coat and gloves, and he moves really weird. He's very creepy. And he ties her up on the like wall of this attic. And yeah, we basically see this is his little nasty little workshop in this attic.
Nasty little workshop.
The nastiest workshop you've ever seen.
Ugh.
And as he's in there, he sets a radio down next to her and starts speaking through it. And so we understand that this is Gabriel from the opening scene.
Okay.
And somehow he can speak through radios and through electrical currents or whatever. And he says, it's a very creepy voice. He says, I can't tell you how long it's like all distorted and like glitchy sounding. It's very spooky. He says, I can't tell you how long I've waited for this, but not yet. First, Dr. Weaver, who is the doctor from the beginning.
Oh, so, okay. So it's the doctor from the beginning.
Yeah. And so then we cut to an older looking Dr. Weaver's house. She is now just sitting in her living room and her phone rings. And the voice, she answers, hello. And we hear his fucking creepy ass voice go, Dr. Weaver. And she goes, yes.
Speaking.
Yes, hello. And he says, it's time to cut out the cancer. And she says, what? I'm sorry, who is this? Like, she's so casual on the phone. It made me laugh so much.
Yes, it's a little hard to hear you. Could you speak up?
And he hangs up. And I guess eventually she
also,
puts...
I imagine, like, if you're trying to really scare her and she's like, yes, I'm sorry, but I'd be like, no, Dr. Weaver. Like, well, that didn't go how I wanted it to. Oh, God.
But after he hangs up, and afterwards she must put two and two together, and she kind of goes over to her old case files and pulls out one of the files and starts thumbing through it. So clearly she remembers that particular sentence, and yeah, she's like going through it. Then we go back to Maddie at her house, and she's doing laundry, and as she's leaning down to put clothes into the washer, in the glass door of the washer, we see Dr. Weaver screaming, and it's a jump scare. really startles Maddie. Maddie falls backwards. Dr. Weaver screams, "What are you doing in my house?" Maddie looks like completely confused and says, "This is my house." Like, what's happening? What's going on? She falls backwards, and it becomes clear that Dr. Weaver is obviously not talking to her, and that Maddie is having some sort of vision and can see inside of Dr. Weaver's house. And as Maddie kind of pushes herself backwards, she freezes, and she is suddenly completely unable to move, as we see Dr. Weaver screaming. And then the house around her does this very cool CGI effect where it kind of smoky bubbles, and the whole house changes into now Dr. Weaver's house. Basically, the camera like pans around her and the whole room shifts into Dr. Weaver's house. So she now has a front row seat to, we see Gabriel in Dr. Weaver's house. He pulls a, basically some sort of award off of her shelf, a Doctor of the Year type of award thing. Mm. That's a very sharp gold statue, kind of a pyramid looking statue.
Sharp as, say, some hard bread crust?
Almost. Almost. He could have gotten her good with some bread crust, though. Take it from me. But he grabs this award, and he basically stabs her in the face with it over and over and over, as Maddie is watching from a frozen position.
I don't like stab in the face. I really don't like that.
It's rough. This one we actually don't totally see. It's from behind a counter, so we just see the spurts of blood coming up and the sound effects of it. But we'll see some face stabbing later, real up close.
Thank God.
Oh, thank God. Thank you for warning us. Wait, I have a question. Is Gabriel like, he's a human though, right?
Yes.
I mean,
but the way he moves is weird, and he has like a demonic quality to him. I don't like, there are times where he's moving really strangely.
Okay.
And times where he looks like kind of glitchy. I don't know. So he does look to be human, but there's something off about him as well.
Okay.
Got it.
At this moment, after he kills her, Maddie starts screaming and eventually is able to, like, she comes to, and she's in her same spot in her apartment. Now it has switched back to her own apartment, and she's just completely freaked out alone in her house. And we see the same detectives Kay and Moss showing up at this crime scene now. And we get the information that Dr. Weaver worked in child reconstructive surgery. And They see that she had pulled out this particular file. They bag all of her files from all of her cases and basically take it all back to the precinct. They're like, okay, we've got some information here. And as they're examining the murder scene, they find basically the bottom half of the murder weapon, the little statue award thing, but it looks like the top half has been cut off. It's missing. And so they say, we need to find the other half of this. And we cut to back in the attic, that top half of the award being fashioned into basically a knife with like a little sharpener thing. Gabriel is making this his weapon. Not sourdough bread, although that would have been a good choice too.
That would have worked.
Would have absolutely worked. And
or a Faya yogurt cup.
Yeah, we're gonna snail mail murderer. James Wan. We're gonna write to him and be like, listen, have you ever thought of sourdough bread though, man? Let's get creative. I think let's keep hitting this sourdough bread note. I think it's a winner. I think we got to keep bringing it up.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring it up probably three more times.
Bring it up a few more times.
I'm gonna bring it up a few more times.
Great. I can't wait personally.
I fucking can't wait.
So you'll never see it coming, but know that it's coming.
Great. We see Maddie learning of Dr. Weaver's death on the news. She vomits. She realizes this is the woman. She basically witnessed her die. Her sister is there. She's crying. She's saying, her sister Sydney is saying, like, did you know her? She says, no, I didn't know her, but I watched her die. Like, I don't know what's happening to me. Something happened. I saw her die. I was there. And we see Detective K back at the precinct going through the file that was pulled out, and it's a picture of a little girl. And he gives it to one of the other guys at the precinct and says, can you age this photo about 30 years? He says, sure.
That's crazy that they can do that.
Yeah.
Wait, why is he going through that file again?
Because that's the file that
Dr. Weaver had pulled out.
That's like the one she was currently looking
through.
We assumed
it was Gabriel, but now it seems like maybe it's this girl, mm-hmm. Maddie.
Well, maybe this girl and Gabriel are the same person. Mm. Is that going to be the twist?
Interesting.
That could be an interesting twist. I'm just curious about, I want to take a kid photo of me and have somebody age it up and be like, does it look like me?
Right. Like, I bet it would look like a bizarro version of you.
Spooky.
So then we go to one of the other doctor's houses from the opening scene. There were basically a few doctors on Gabriel's case. And so we are seeing this other doctor. This is an older man on the phone saying, I don't know who would want to hurt Frances or whatever her name is, Dr. Weaver. Like, she just helped kids. Like, I don't understand. This doesn't make any sense. Who would want to hurt her? And as he's pacing around his bedroom, he notices his bedroom window is like wide open and he had just closed it or something. And he walks over and there's some wet footprints heading into his walk-in closet. He's just kind of like, this is strange. And goes and slowly grabs a towel, peeks around in the closet. It's all very stressful. But nothing ever happens except when he kind of peeks out the window and is looking around, and we see Gabriel behind him. He shuts the window and turns around, and Gabriel's gone again. He gets into bed, and then we go to Maddie's house where she is in bed, and she opens her eyes and is again frozen in fear, and we see that she is facing this doctor in his bed, once again transported to a different room, frozen in fear, watching like face to face with this guy. And this is where we get this really cool shot from the trailer where Gabriel comes from behind her and she can like sense him there, and she's shaking, terrified, and we just see him like raise up behind her and basically crawl over her.
Ugh.
And straddle this doctor, and he whips out his little newly fashioned weapon. I don't know.
Sammy, what?
I was going to say this could be a pretty good time to bring up the sourdough joke again.
I bet there'll be more opportunities.
It's always a good time. It never gets old.
Literally never gets old.
No.
Unlike the bread, which is very old.
The bread is old. Oh, stale as hell.
Good one.
And this is where we get the real close-up face stabbing. And Gabriel just stabs him in the face a bunch of times. And it looks really gnarly. I was interested to know how they did this. I would love to see just a making of this scene, because it looks fucking brutal.
Real?
Yeah, it looks like real. It looks like real. He just stabs him a bunch of times in the face. Oof. It's rough. And as he has finished stabbing and he's just kind of leaned over the man looking at him, he senses Maddie there and turns to look at her. And this is where we get our first look at Gabriel's face. And it is very deformed. It is kind of like, basically all you see is like some teeth and his eyes. It's very crazy looking. She's super freaked out and she wakes up screaming.
Scary.
And tells her sister, I saw him, I saw his face. And They go to the detectives to report it. She says, you know, I know this sounds crazy. Something's happening to me, but somebody else was murdered and I saw it. And she basically could see a sign out the window from her point of view when she was frozen in the bed of where it was. So she knows that it was in this one particular building on the top floor. And so the detectives go and they're, you know, kind of not believing her, rolling their eyes at her like, okay, this is, you know, you sound kind of crazy. And she's like, well, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Like, just go check. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And great. But, you know, just go look. So they do. They find him murdered there. And so now Maddie is really freaked out. It is, you know, again, further confirmed that something is happening and she is seeing these murders. And so she goes into the water to splash some or goes to the bathroom to splash some water on her face, and her phone rings and the lights start flickering in the bathroom, and she pulls out her phone. It's from an unknown caller.
And where is she now?
She's still in the precinct.
In the precinct. Okay.
And yeah, they've basically come back after finding.
Okay. I've been like, you're right.
Yeah. And she answers and hears, "Hello, Emily." Sorry, Emily.
That's my name.
And she says, "My name is Madison." And he says, "You'll always be Emily to me." And she looks very scared. And he says, "You know who I am. Even if they say I'm only in your head, you let them tell you that I wasn't real and you believed them. Now I'm going to make them pay one by one." And she screams, "Gabriel, no!" And at this point, nobody knows the name Gabriel. Nobody has said it. And so she looks like shocked, like she has just surprised herself that she seemed to remember a name out of nowhere. And this really tickles Gabriel, and he starts, and he says, like, "I knew you always, deep down, you always knew. You never forgot me, basically. You always knew." And she says, "Gabriel, please stop." And he says, "We're just getting started." And he hangs up.
Oh, my God.
She's freaked out. She goes back into the main area where everybody else is at the precinct, grabs Sydney, says, "We got to get out. Let's get out of here." Grabs her. They leave.
And I'm those detectives. I'm like, I'm sorry. Wait.
Yeah.
Psychic lady, I would like for you to not leave.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Lady that just led us directly to a violent crime scene that has no explanation.
And they got really freaked out and left quickly.
Yeah. Pretty suspicious.
Yeah, please stay.
So Detective K asks the guy from earlier, "Were you able to age that photo?" He says, "Yeah, it's on your desk. I saw you. You had her in." And he says, "What?" And he says, "The lady that was just here.
There it like, is.
That's her." And sure enough, he pulls out the aged photo and it looks like a bizarro Madison. It's kind of like, you know, when you do that thing that shows you what your face would look like if it was exactly the same on both sides.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where it just like something's a little
symmetrical.
Off. Yeah, perfectly symmetrical. Yeah. Yeah, that's what this like photo of her looks like. It's like obviously her, but yeah. Anyways.
Okay.
So Maddie and Sydney are driving to their mom's house, and they get there, and Maddie basically says, you know, what, something crazy is going on. What do you know about Gabriel? And we see Maddie's mom get a look of fear on her face. And we go inside, and Maddie's mom puts a videotape in the VCR, and we watch some old home videos where it's Maddie's birthday. We see that her mom is pregnant with Sydney, and they're singing happy birthday to her, and Maddie turns and whispers to someone, and they say, "Who are you talking to?" She says, "Gabriel." And they basically go through a few different home videos where it seems that Maddie is talking to someone named Gabriel and looking really scared when she's talking to him. This is not a fun imaginary friend. And the mom basically says, you know, this really freaked us out when you were doing this. We didn't know what was happening. But then you just stopped and then you never brought him up again. And we figured it was nothing. And
That's convenient.
Yeah. And at this time we see Detective K simultaneously watching a video of Dr. Weaver that he has found in the case files. And it's again, Dr. Weaver talking straight to camera, like a little report update on the case. And she says she's talking now about Emily May, who is the previous name that Madison must have had. And
pretty weird to adopt a kid at 8 and change their name.
Yeah.
Also pretty weird of her to like not remember that. Well, her name was
different. You repressed clearly that something shit. Yeah, traumatic has happened.
You push that way deep down.
Yep.
So she says Emily May is unlike any other patient we've ever had. She says she's seeing visions and hearing thoughts from the devil. And Detective K is watching this thinking like, okay, well, it's Madison. Like, this is incriminating for Madison. Like, she's obviously has mental problems.
Yeah.
And is now getting more suspicious of Madison. Back at home, Maddie is brushing her teeth, and as she like leans down to spit into the sink, when she comes back up, her reflection is another old man, the third of the doctors from the opening scene. And again, she freezes still, can't move, and the room changes into this doctor's bathroom. And we see Detective K. Basically, I think he sees a photo of the three doctors, realizes two of them are dead, and is like, okay, so this third guy's coming next. And so he starts going to this guy's house. And as he gets there, he finds...
This is the kind of detective work in movies that I do understand.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's a logical conclusion.
Okay, great. Yes. A human detective could come here to this conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm following. Mm-hmm. I'm following. And so he gets there and finds this man murdered in his bathtub. It is too late. He has been killed. And then we see Madison frozen in fear, watching and trying to communicate to Detective K. She is yelling, but can't move, and saying, "Detective, he's still here." And the detective can't see or hear her. And we just see
Gabriel. In her vision, she sees the detective in that place.
Yes.
Okay.
And we see Gabriel come out from a little corner and attack Detective K. And they get into a fight. Gabriel's slashing at Detective K with his little knife. And Detective K has a gun and starts shooting. And so Gabriel makes a run for it, gets out of the building and runs onto the street and kicks out a little grate and just scutters into that old underground city.
Yep.
Love how you do that. Love how you can do that in Seattle. That's so cool.
What a cool thing for a city to have.
I personally hate it. Me personally, no thank you. I've considered moving to Seattle before, and you know, now I'm not so sure.
No, if you could just scuttle underground into a little underground city.
And he does scuttle. Anywhere you can just want to point out his movements.
I think that's the only way to do it.
His movements, as a reminder, are unnatural.
What else scuttles? Beetles?
Yes.
Yeah, beetles scuttle.
Yes.
Scuttling I usually associate as being kind of a cute movement, but here it's definitely not a cute movement. It's not cute
in this moment, no. And so the chase continues. Oh, also, like, to get to, because they were in a pretty high floor of this building. And so to get to ground level, Gabriel basically, like, goes through the fire escapes and he moves almost superhumanly. Like, he's in, like, an action, like, Matrix movie. He's just, like, jumping from level to level in a way that Detective K is watching him, like, what the fuck? And, like, is trying to follow him as best he can. But obviously, Gabriel is, like, much faster and stronger. And, but eventually, the detective also crawls into the underground city. Yuck, yuck, yuck. And
not any backup. Oh, what a bummer.
No backup. And
yeah, don't do this.
It's like foggy down there somehow. I guess I buy it. Sure. And there's jalopies and shit. It's nasty. And so they get to this one, you know, space with jalopies, and we see Gabriel laying on top of one of the jalopies as Detective K is kind of peeking around, trying to find him.
It's a jalopy.
It's like an old car, like a Peaky Blinders car.
You know, I think I always pronounced it jalopy.
Me too.
Is it jalopy?
I don't know.
I don't know.
We'll never know. There's actually no way to know.
I don't think there's a way to find out.
There's no way to find out.
Yeah, this is an unanswerable question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
jalopies everywhere.
Jalopies everywhere. Gabriel jumps on Detective K, and Detective K gets his first look, real look at Gabriel, who has, hisses at him with this kind of, like, nasty little face, like, yeah. So again, he can't talk unless he's talking through the radio. And
at this point, Detective K is like, okay, so different person.
Yeah, he's like, okay, yeah. So not Madison. And
good to know, good to know.
And again, Gabriel gets away and scrambles up the walls now and, like, disappears through a little hole. He's, like, too fast, and Detective K loses him. Detective K goes back to Maddie's, says, you know, all three victims were involved in the same case study, which we believe is your case study. You are Emily May. You are somehow involved in this. We need to figure it out. Would you be willing to see a hypnotherapist? Like, you clearly have some, like, repressed memories. She says, yes, let's do it. They have a hypnotherapist come in, and we get, takes her back. We get a flashback of young Maddie, again, with her mom pregnant with Sydney. Present day Maddie is kind of, you know, hypnotized and, like, saying, like, I used to get in trouble for everything that he did. And I was the only one that can see him. And we see her standing over a cake that's like a welcome cake for the new baby, and it's clearly like someone has stuck their finger in it and eaten part of it, and she's getting yelled at for it, and she's saying it was Gabriel, I didn't do that, and her mom's getting frustrated with her, and so she gets, like, sent to her room, and in her room her little play phone rings, and she talks to Gabriel through there. We don't really hear the conversation, but he's, like, clearly telling her to do something. And so she then goes back into the dining room and back to the cake and picks up a knife, and he's like, slice the cake. She, like, hears his voice telling her to cut the cake, eat it. And she starts cutting, and then the room changes and reveals that she is actually in her parents' room over her mom's pregnant belly with the knife.
Jesus.
And her mom wakes up, starts screaming, and Maddie starts screaming. Young Maddie starts screaming, and present day Maddie starts screaming, and it becomes, like, overwhelming, and they pull her out of the hypnosis. And she says, you know, Gabriel wanted to hurt the baby. He wanted to hurt you. He knew that if you came, I wouldn't need him anymore. And Detective Moss is like, so, okay, are you saying that the killer is your childhood imaginary friend? And then we cut to back in the attic. This woman from the underground tour is still tied up there, and she's kind of trying to break herself free. She eventually does, and she's tiptoeing around in the attic. Gabriel's not there. and she's trying to like quietly escape, and she takes one step and falls through the floor and into Maddie's living room. She's in Maddie's attic. All of them are there. This is happening simultaneously as they're in Maddie's house doing the hypnotherapy, and they all turn and see this woman, and Maddie just starts screaming, like really crazy screaming.
Wait, the spooky cover
of Where's My Mind starts playing. Wee-wee-wee.
Okay, so the woman was taken from the underground tour to Maddie's attic.
That's where she's been.
Yes. Okay, sorry. At first, I thought you meant Maddie's whole house was under the underground.
Oh, no.
And I was like, no. I was like, that's
and
an interesting twist.
And then we're in the second underground city.
Okay, that makes more sense. Okay.
And so the detectives go up there, find all of Gabriel's stuff, the weapon, his clothes, and they arrest Maddie. They're like, okay, it's you.
Obviously, it's
like
you.
You're connected. Yeah. You're part of this. They arrest her. Sydney's freaking out. Like, it's not her. It's not her. They're yelling, or Maddie like yells at Detective K, like, you've seen him. You've seen him. You know it's not me. And he looks a little torn. Like, he's still not 100% convinced. The other detective, Detective Moss, is like, no, it's her. And so they bring her into an interrogation room at the station. And as they start interrogating her, the lights start to flicker, the lights explode, and the detective's phone start ringing. And Maddie says he wants to talk to you. And
okay. They
answer the phone, and we hear Gabriel's scary voice, and Detective K says, who are you? And he says, didn't she tell you? I'm a figment of her imagination.
Okay.
And then he says, ask
Sammy, you're doing such a good job of that voice. It's perfect. I can tell. Mm-hmm.
It's spot on. And he says, ask her what she used to call me. And they turn to look at Maddie, and she says, the devil. And the detectives look pretty freaked out now. They're like, okay, what the fuck is going on? We cut to Sydney is now kind of taking things into her own hands because she knows something is not right. And so she starts looking into this Emily May's past, like what hospital she was at. And she tracks down the hospital from the beginning, which is now abandoned. And she decides to go there to see if she can track down records or something that could give her some answers to what the fuck's going on and who Gabriel is. So she drives up to this. It's like a cliffside, gothic, spooky ass hospital, abandoned.
And I'm telling you, in scary movies, people need to start telling just one friend
where they're going.
Just tell one friend where you're going. No, tell two friends, bring one of them. You gotta stop making decisions only for you and then acting out on them alone.
You got to.
You got. You,
it's irresponsible.
We need a buddy system. We just need a buddy system.
We absolutely need a buddy system.
So.
All right.
She does not have a buddy system. She drives up there and with like such speed and confidence parks like an inch from the edge of the cliff. It's so funny. It made me laugh so hard. She just so casually is like, well, this looks like a great spot to park. It's insane. It's the craziest parking spot I've ever seen. She parks there. She goes into this abandoned hospital by herself. Mm-mm. Of course, the records are in the basement.
What time of day?
This is nighttime, dead of night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolute dead of night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay.
And so she goes down and she finds the files. She's thumbing through them. It's like cobwebs, completely dark. She's using like her cell phone light. Insane.
Oh my God. She's like, I feel safe and comfortable. I'm happy.
Oh God. And so, and then we cut back to, we see Maddie is now in a holding cell with a bunch of other women. And this is like your traditional, like intimidating looking women. Maddie's out of play. I'm not supposed to be here. This is a mistake. And everyone kind of looking at her like, this bitch, it's not looking good for her in this cell. And then we cut to Sydney back at home with the case files now and her mom. No scare in the abandoned hospital.
Oh, I love it. Okay, great. Great.
Crazy.
Perfect.
That's crazy. James.
And she didn't even have her car pushed off the side of the cliff.
Didn't even
or
have
anything.
Her car that pushed part- off the cliff.
James.
So she's back home with her mom now, and she has more files and videotapes, and they put one in the VCR that is labeled Serena May. And this is Emily's mom, young, and she's crying and saying, I don't know how to look after them on my own. He's an abomination. Please look after, please look after Emily. And tears are streaming down her face. The mom, Sydney's mom is like furious. She's like, they told me she died during childbirth. Like, what the fuck is going on? And we get like a close up of Serena May's face crying in the tape, and it cross fades to the woman from the attic now in the hospital. And so we are meant to learn that that is Serena May.
Oh, so she was older.
Yes.
So the woman from the attic was, okay, so old enough to be her mom. Yes. Fascinating. Okay.
So what we know so far. is this woman is their mother. They are siblings.
Twins.
And when this Maddie's adoptive mother adopted her, she thought, just one kid, mom died during childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And we see in the hospital that the detectives have figured out that she is Serena May and that they are related because they were easily able to ID her. She hasn't changed her name, so they're like, put it together in the hospital room. Okay, this is Maddie's birth mother. And back in with Sydney and the mom watching the tapes, they now have a tape in of an interview with young Emily. And they're saying, Dr. Weaver is saying, I've given him a heavy sedative, like, you're safe. He's not going to wake up. We wanted some time alone without Gabriel. And we hear Emily says, he pretends to be nice, but he's the devil. And like, she's clearly really scared of him. And back in the jail cell, we see some of the women starting to fuck with Maddie. Maddie looking scared. And they're kind of like, you know, what are you in here for? Just giving her shit. It's not looking good. Looks like a fight is approaching. And back to them watching the tape. Dr. Weaver says, okay, I'm going to wake up Gabriel now. And walks around but behind Emily, camera pans, and we see a conjoined twin. Very underdeveloped, so it kind of just looks skeletal, like screeching on her back, like,
Oh my god.
Back in the jail cell, the women start, like, they throw Maddie to the ground and start, like, kicking her. And we're still getting voiceover from Dr. Weaver kind of explaining her case file in this videotape. And she says Gabriel is an extreme version of a teratoma, a parasitic twin. Like, they grew together. One became dominant. One was underdeveloped. And we thought we could save Gabriel, but it's clear that he is, you know, it's not working out. And so they decide to cut. It's time to cut out the cancer. We see young Emily going into surgery and them removing as much of Gabriel as they can. She says they share a brain. He controls the part of her brain, or he can control the part of her brain that has to do with vision. So he can make her see things. And that's why she has been having these hallucinations. But if we were to cut him out entirely, she would die. Like, we can't obviously cut out that part of her brain. And so they cut out as much as they can and, like, suppress the rest in. And we're getting all visual.
They suppress?
Like, just like.
They suppress
it? They just push it in. They push it in and close the skull behind it. It's crazy. We get full close-ups of all of this, cutting off, like, the little limbs.
If we just squish it over to the side. If we just squish it as much over to the side.
Yes, just squish it in.
Just squish it in.
That's how brain works. You just squish as much as you can fit into a skull. It's just whatever fits in the skull, you just squish it in.
And the parts you don't want, the parts that are bad, you just really squish those harder.
If they fit, just squish it.
Squish it in. And we see back in the jail cell, the women now beating Maddie up, kicking her, and she starts having a seizure. And as she does, she starts standing up, and the back of her skull splits open, and we see Gabriel's nasty little face protrude out of it, going like, again. And all of the women in this holding cell are like, oh my God, what the fuck is happening? And he basically bends her limbs the other way. So her knees like snap the other way. So it's like Maddie, but backwards. So Maddie's face is on the back of his head now, but he's
like
facing
Voldemort in fucking.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. And the way he moves is so crazy. And this fucking fight scene ensues that really should be seen to be believed. It is incredible. And the actor that plays Gabriel, because it is not Annabelle Wallace, it is a woman dancer and contortionist, and she moves so fucking cool. I mean, it looks incredible. It's just so weird, and you just can't understand what's happening. This is, okay, from like this point on, my jaw was on the floor for the whole rest of the movie. Like, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. And so this fight scene ensues in which she just moves inhumanly and starts just fucking murdering these women left and right. One woman comes at her, she snaps those forearms, pops the bones right out, snaps her neck.
Oh,
she punches right through somebody's chest. She knocks one girl down, steps on her head, explodes her skull. And
I'm sorry.
Wait, there's something about this that's really making me laugh.
It's hilarious. I was laughing so much.
The part of Gabriel that they squished into her skull was his face?
Yes, because that's what's on your head. That was the only part they couldn't cut off.
And so underneath her hair is a face?
Well,
or when she gets
the skull, like, split open. Yes, so her head injury from the beginning of the film is what instigated all of this, what woke Gabriel back up, if you will.
Got it.
So
wow.
She kills all the women in the holding cell, a cop comes, she grabs him, smashes his head against the poles on the jail door, and the poles on the jail door kills him, grabs the keys, is able to get out. He goes down to the storeroom to go get his stuff. He needs his weapon. He needs his fucking leather duster. He gets geared up to be Gabriel again. And the detectives come back to the station and find all this carnage that has happened, and the fight just fucking continues. And now Gabriel's got his little knife. He's killing all the cops now. The camera is just like rotating circles around.
And what is Maddie doing at this point?
Unconscious. But we get glimpses of her just basically asleep face on the back of Gabriel's head, which is the best part about this scene, is that it looks. You need to watch just this scene at least. It's so funny.
Oh my God.
I really want to see it.
God.
It's incredible. But like it's also just, it's so stupid and insane and you're laughing, but it's also very well done and visually just very cool. Like James Wan's camera work is always so impressive. And so it's like the cinematography is great and the contortionist is great. And so it's like absolutely bonkers, but it's amazing.
Wow.
And again, a cop tries to shoot him. He grabs both of her hands and just pops those fucking forearm bones out of her skin again. It's his favorite thing to do. He loves snapping people's forearms. And Detective K like sees Madison asleep on the backside of Gabriel and he's like yelling like, "Madison, Madison, wake up."
What could Madison possibly do if she woke up?
And we see Madison back in the holding cell, wake back up again in this like little mental prison that Gabriel is able to put her in because he's able to control that like vision part of her brain. So she's like still locked in the cell, but can also half see kind of what's happening. And she can see, or she's like trying to, but she's frozen still again. So she can't do anything. That thing is happening where she's powerless now. Gabriel's in the driver's seat and she's trying, but she can't do anything. And she's trying to regain power, but she can't. Detective Moss at one point gets sliced on through the belly by Gabriel, not fatally, but it doesn't look good. And it's clear that Gabriel is just winning these fights easily. So the detectives start trying to like make a run for the door and Gabriel grabs a chair and throws it like 100 feet across the room. Like it's the craziest chair throw I've ever seen. And he is eventually Gabriel, like, I think just like jumps through the window and runs away and they're both injured. And so they're like, okay, well, like we need to regroup here. And Sydney is going to the hospital to see Serena May. I guess she has also figured out that that's Serena May and thinks like, okay, she'll have some more answers, goes there. And as she gets to the hospital, all the lights in the hospital start flickering. One of the hospital guards that's guarding Serena May's room has like a pacemaker and he's like, "My pacemaker, it's vibrating. It's clear that Gabriel's coming." And Sydney's able to go in to talk to Serena May, but immediately Gabriel comes in and starts trying to attack Sydney, says, "I was saving you for last." He clearly hates Sydney so much because this is the sibling that Madison chose over him. And as he is about to kill Sydney, Serena turns to him and says, "Gabriel, please forgive me. And I should never have given you up. You were my son. Like, I should have loved you." And they have this like sweet moment, like a emotional moment where he's looking at her, considering this. But at that moment, Detective K comes in and starts shooting at Gabriel. Sydney's yelling, "No, like that's you'll kill Madison. Like, don't shoot her." And is able to somehow knock Detective.
What future do we imagine Madison has?
Yeah. Like, again, Madison wakes up and things are bad for her. Things are just bad. Things are not good. They already tried squishing Gabriel.
The squishing didn't work. If the squishing didn't work, I don't know what other options we have.
Yeah, they've already tried everything.
That was science's best answer for this.
Squish it in.
Was to squish.
Push it in. Seal it up.
Hope that she never hits her head and squish it in.
And just don't tell her.
And so wow. Sydney is able to, I think, like knock Detective K unconscious or something to get Detective K to not shoot at Madison, and she is yelling like, "Madison, I know you're in there." And we see Madison in the room with them again, watching it frozen, like trying to do something about it. She can't. She's like, "Please, Gabriel, no, like stop it, stop it." And then Sydney says, "Maddie, please, I know you can hear me." And we see Gabriel like picking up the detective's gun and holding it to, like, he's about to kill Sydney, and Maddie still can't move. And Sydney says, "He killed your babies. He was feeding off your babies. He's the reason you had your miscarriages. Your fetuses made him stronger." and we see
what
Maddie's fingers start to move. This information is the motivation she needed, but we see Gabriel shoot Sydney, shoots her in the head, kills Sydney. But she's starting to move. Madison's starting to move. And then he walks over to Serena May, starts smothering her, says, "You made me a monster. I wanted you to see what you did." Smothers her, kills her.
Holy shit.
And then we hear Maddie say, "No, Gabriel, you were always a monster." And the room changes back to him with the Gabriel with the gun before killing Sydney. And it is revealed
that Madison,
yes, has now gotten the power and given a little hallucination to him. And she is now in control. And she basically locks him up in the little mental prison in the little jail cell. And he's screaming, he's pissed, and she's like, you can't hurt me anymore. I'm in control now. You'll never hurt me again. And
we'll all move forward.
We'll just forget this ever happened.
You know, there's a little man in the back of my head.
And then she like wakes up, her face reanimates on the Gabriel body, and she smushes him back in. Her skull seals back up, and she runs to Sydney, hugs Sydney. Serena May is still alive. Everyone's crying. She says to Sydney, "I said that I wanted a blood connection, and I've always had one right here. I love you so much." They embrace, and the camera pulls back, and we see a little light in the corner flicker. And that's the end of the movie.
What?
It's so crazy.
What?
Oh my God.
What?
Oh my God.
Wait. This is, you know, I'm speechless. Honestly, I'm speechless, because the thing is like, it's almost become a trope now where it's like the enemy, the evil person is like the protagonist or whatever, you know, kind of always looking out for it, but it's, you know, it's fucking ballsy to make it a conjoined parasitic twin that's living on the back of their head.
It's not so much a trope that it is not the person, but the person living inside the actual person living inside the back of that person's brain. All I can picture is that little Voldemort head.
Mm-hmm. It's very much like that. It's unlike, oh my God, it's just the commitment to this ridiculous premise is really admirable. I just would fucking love to see them writing this script. Like, they're like, yeah. Like, what was that like? Like, three of them wrote it, I feel like, together, and it's just so funny to imagine them being like, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, like, did they think it's funny?
Yes, I do think that they do. Like, I think that it is pretty self-aware, and it's got a lot of giallo influences, like small things that, like, Gabriel wears gloves and there's always close-ups of the knife, like, is always something that, like, Argento always did and that kind of thing.
Right.
Like, it's definitely James Wan, like, having fun. And again, bringing that over-the-top ridiculousness of a Fast and the Furious movie to horror. And it's just really very fun, and it's very stupid.
All right.
And there's not a lot of... there's not a lot of good, like, you know, commentary on trauma or abuse or like these things that it includes, but then doesn't really have anything to say about it. But it kind of doesn't matter because we just had a great time.
Wow.
I think I will look up that fight scene just because I'm really curious, especially because you say it's a woman, a real woman doing it. That's fascinating to me. I really want to see that.
Oh my God.
Wow.
For myself.
Wow.
Jesus, Sammy. Well, thank you for taking on us. You promised us a wild ride and you delivered.
You did deliver.
And also one like fun thing to note is that the reason that nothing scary happened in the abandoned hospital is because she was in jail at that time. So no Gabriel it wouldn't be possible for Gabriel to appear there, which I thought was kind of fun. But also, there could have been a fake out scare. Like, it's like a very spooky place for there to be no scare. But I kind of like
that. It's kind of fun for there to be no scare. Yeah. It's surprising that there was no scare. And that's cool.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Wow. James Wan just fucking doing
just
it hard.
Just doing it hard. Yeah.
Yeah. This one really surprised me. I was not expecting any of that. I was not expecting it. And I had a lot of fun. So I recommend it.
Wow.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, there's definitely a voice in this one.
There's definitely a voice, Senley. Okay. From all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch. Goodbye. If you like this episode, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You could also rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts or follow us on social media at TSDW Podcast or join us on Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW Podcast where you will get access to trailer reactions and 2 bonus episodes a month. And just a reminder that we will be gone next week celebrating the marriage of Henley and Tim. And so we'll be back here for you in 2 weeks. We love you. Bye.